The Guardian.
Hello, I'm not Alexis Petridis, I'm Michael Hann. Alexis has been in Los Angeles this week, so I'm stepping in to host Music Weekly. Coming up on this week's Frankly Thunderous show, we'll be heading backstage at the Brixton Academy to talk to Bran Daler, the drummer of Mastodon. We've got Singles Club, of course, and Emma Warren goes all the way to heaven with Azarian Third. That's all here on Music Weekly from The Guardian. I'm delighted to be joined this week by Dom Lawson, The Guardian's metal maven.
I don't think I've ever been called a maven before.
There's a first time for everything, Dom.
Absolutely, yeah. I've been called worse, though. Well, that's fine.
And making his debut on Music Weekly, it's Adam Bolt from Guardian.co.uk Music's community.
Hello there. What's a maven?
A maven. Well, let's not get into dictionary definitions for fear that I, in fact, get it wrong. Let's just say it's a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good thing. Meet someone who's expert and embraces everything. So, Adam, as our community coordinator, you are the man charged with looking at the Guardian comments threads, finding out what people are talking about in the world of music. I guess this week it's been Whitney Houston, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's been lots of tributes to Whitney Houston, people posting their favourite videos of, you know, favourite performances, and all sorts of different cover versions of I Will Always Love You. There's been a...
Are there any we should be particularly looking forward to?
I think the favourite was one of a small Chinese boy with a bowl haircut who looks a bit like Jimmy Cranky doing one of the most soulful interpretations I've ever seen. So it's on our Guardian Tumblr, so do look out for it.
And did he have the melisma going and everything?
The melisma?
The... Oh,
yeah, it was... If anything, it was... It was almost better than Whitney, although that's, you know, perhaps slightly distasteful at this time.
And Dom, what have you been up to this week?
Not a great deal. I went to see Mastodon, which is helpful, isn't it?
On Saturday
at Brixton Academy, which was a treat.
How were they?
They were epic and thunderous, as you could probably imagine. They were really, really good. It was, I think, their first headlining show at Brixton and the biggest gig they've ever done, I think, in this country, certainly. And
Now, how did it work at Brixton? Because I know people love that venue, I think mainly because of the sloping floor.
Yeah.
But I hate it because the sound always turns to mud. Did they conquer the muddy Brixton sound?
Well, my hearing's in tatters, generally, anyway, so I'm probably not the best person to judge. But yeah, it was unusually good for Brixton Academy, actually. It wasn't too loud for once. And, the two bands that went on before them suffered a little bit, but Mastodon sounded pretty good to me, I must say.
So between your hearing and a set of cheap earphones, more or less everything since Lonnie Donegan sounds like Mastodon to you.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. That's how I like to approach music, you know, just as long as it's loud.
Ear Defenders at the ready now because, as you know, Mastodon have been in town. And we sent our reporter Stevie Chick down to the Brixton Academy to talk to their drummer, Bran Daler. He calls himself the skinsmith of the band. And we wanted to know from him the defining moments of heavy metal. What's the best guitar solo? Where can you hear the wildest scream? What's the heaviest riff? Bran Daler revealed all.
This is the end of 5 weeks of touring.
Yes.
For you. And,
yes.
And you're quite tired. And you know. Yeah,
this is, tour gets a bit long in the tooth.
Long in the tooth,
that's
exactly.
What we say, yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that's fantastic about Mastodon is that you do have. The drums is almost like a lead instrument. You're very much in the forefront. And you were saying there's a lot of notes, and you do...
Yeah, it's a lot of notes, and it's a lot of energy expended during the set. It's a good cardiovascular workout. You know, my heart appreciates it.
Excellent.
And my body appreciates it. I can eat anything I want. Double cheeseburger, bring it on.
Excellent. Well, we're going to talk about some of the pinnacle moments in the genre of heavy metal. I'm going to start with the best solo.
Yeah,
where would people find the best solo? Where's the best?
Well,
place
the best solo for me, if anybody knows anything about my history, is that would be on the Randy Rhoads tribute album. Ozzy put out a tribute to Randy Rhoads in the mid to late '80s. Sometime it was '86 or '87, somewhere in that ballpark. It's got some insane solos. That's where I first really fell in love with Randy Rhoads playing, was through that record. I mean, I'd heard the studio versions earlier in my life. My uncle was a big fan of his and would play those Ozzy records all the time, and it were great, but it wasn't until that record came out that I really connected to it. You know, really beautiful guitar playing, just And in particular, at the end of Mr. Crowley, is he just goes off and it's insane. It's really beautiful. So. He was, I think, one of the people that really was able to introduce classical music into the heavy metal subconscious or the stream, you know, and bring that style of guitar playing in.
That's fabulous. Well, our next category, I expect you to be a particular genius at. What metal album would we be able to find the most thunderous drumming?
I'm going to go with a newer album called A Senile Animal by the Melvins.
Wow.
There's Cody and Dale.
Right.
They're just insane on that record, and the drums just sounded ridiculous, you know what I mean? You know, just when you thought the Melvins were just the Melvins, you know what I mean? That they just go and change everything once again and make it, you know, even better. They're so good at reinventing themselves, but that record in particular.
Is that the one where they introduced, is Cody from Big Business?
Yeah, Cody and Jared from Big Business joined forces with Dale and King Buzzo. It's perfect, you know. So, yeah, there's some sections on there that are just drums, you know, that just go on for forever, and it's like it's a song on its own, you know.
Fantastic,
really, really cool.
Well, our next choice is the skeleton, if you like, of heavy metal, the riff. Where are we going to find the heaviest riff?
I'm going to go for a song called The Doorway by a band called Neurosis off Times of Grace. And I think if you listen to that record, you'll hear some of the heaviest riffs you've ever heard in your life. And I just remember seeing that live. I was lucky enough to do a tour with Neurosis on that album, and they opened with that song every night. And as soon as it kicked in, you're just like, just blew your mind completely, you know? Just like, wow.
Where would we find the most profound lyrics, do you think, in metal?
I think Satan laughing spreads his wings is pretty epic.
Yeah.
And profound. Just the image of that, that's just paints this clear, just demonic, that's what heavy metal is, you know. It's like, you know, going into the macabre and the you know, the satanic stuff is important to the genre.
Definitely.
It's like creating this mood, this horror movie, you know, and this kind of Satan laughing spreads his wings is just perfect, you know. I think it says it all.
Fantastic. And that's, of course, from War Pigs by Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath. If you haven't heard that song, you should probably check it out.
Yeah, if you haven't heard that song, I think you should just take a good hard look at yourself and ask some questions.
Exactly.
But,
Day of Judgment, God is calling. Underneath the war pigs crawling, begging mercies for the sins. Satan laughing spreads his wings. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Where would we be able to find the wildest scream in heavy metal?
I think that's pretty painfully obvious, you know. I'd say Slayer has that one nailed in the beginning of Angel of Death. That's your deal. And it's not like he's in pain. You know he's not in pain. You know that he's about to just unleash. Yeah. And that's like the beginning of the best thrash album ever created, you know?
Definitely.
There you go. Buckle up.
Brand Daler of Mastodon, thank you so much for that.
Thanks, man.
Wicked.
I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
That was Bran Daler of Mastodon talking about his five defining metal moments. Now, of course, the reason we asked you along this week, Dom Lawson, is because you are the Guardian's Mr. Metal. And you are the man in a position to pass judgment upon his selection. So it would be a brave man who picked up Mastodon on more or less anything they had to say or
yeah.
do.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that that's a role that I can take on with some confidence there.
Now, what do you make to those choices? It's quite interesting for me that, as someone who's not in metal, that he stepped outside what most people think of as metal by picking the Melvins.
Yeah, yeah, it's strange. That. I mean, I suppose thunderous drumming. When I hear that phrase, John Bonham springs to mind immediately for me. But even that's kind of outside pure kind of heavy metal in to a great extent. But yeah, I think the thing with Dale Crover from the Melvins particularly is that he's one of those drummers that is rated by other drummers, and Dave Grohl's always cited him as a big influence, and I guess the Melvins had this reputation for being one of the heaviest bands ever anyway, which has a lot to do with his drumming and how hard he hits them and all the rest of it. So I guess, I suspect it's because Mastodon are not a conventional metal band in many ways, you know, and they don't come from the traditional heavy metal scene in that sense, although obviously Brand's a fan of that stuff from, you know, the choices he's made. But I think the Melvins are kind of the precursor to bands like Mastodon, really, that are kind of heavy and obviously influenced by Sabbath and things like that, but that don't necessarily adhere to the cliches and the usual things that you would associate with, you know, Iron Maiden and Judas Priest and those kind of things. They're a little bit more kind of alternative, for want of a less overused phrase.
Now, Randy Rhodes, again, someone who most people outside of metal won't be that familiar with. I mean, his recorded legacy basically amounts to the first Ozzy Osbourne solo record, doesn't it, really?
That's the first two, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
was
he on the second one as well?
Yeah, he's on Diary of a Madman, yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry. I apologise for my Randy Rhodes error there.
-5 metal points.
Now, but in the last couple of weeks, I've been watching this amazing series on Sky Arts, Metal Evolution, and Randy Rhodes' name keeps coming up. People saying Randy Rhodes and Eddie Van Halen were the two players who completely changed the way that hard rock and metal guitarists approach their music. So what was it that was so special about Randy Rhodes?
I suppose it's very similar to the Eddie Van Halen thing in a way. He kind of altered the vocabulary of a hard rock or metal guitarist. I think prior to that it was, you know, you had people like Michael Schenker and Frank Marino and all those people who were very influenced by the blues and by Hendrix and Eric Clapton and all those kind of things. And it was less specifically a metal thing. And I think the vocabulary of metal guitarists was very much formed by Eddie Van Halen's technique and the kind of tricks and the tapping and all the kind of different things that he threw in to his playing. And certainly, I mean, Brand's absolutely right about Randy Rhodes injecting that kind of classical music element into guitar solos, particularly, not necessarily riffs. I mean, that was, you know, the riff thing is kind of has existed, you know, and evolved kind of very steadily. But certainly when Randy Rhodes started putting in those kind of Mozart-influenced things into his solos and that kind of sense of melodrama within a solo, rather than just playing some kind of cool blues licks or even with Eddie Van Halen just playing incredibly fast, you know, it had a profound effect on metal, I think, and you can hear the influence of Randy Rhodes in most of the great guitar players of the last 20, 30 years. You know, it's
do you still hear that in the metal that's being made today? I mean, it's another of his choices. There was Neurosis, who I saw last year, and from my position as an outsider, seem to embody a lot of what I think of as modern metal.
Right.
But they seem to be without that flashiness, without the pyrotechnics.
Yeah. Neurosis are a lot, I would say, a lot more arty, really, and I mean that in a good way. They're much more left field, really, and I think they're a band that kind of eschew all the kind of cliches, and you know, in the same way that Mastodon do, really. That, you know, you won't hear any kind of Eddie Van Halen-esque licks or solos coming out of Mastodon or Neurosis, and I think again they come from a more kind of underground scene where metal is kind of, you know, blended in with punk and all those kind of things. So it's a slightly different thing. But you do, I mean, absolutely, particularly I'd say in the extreme metal scene, in black metal and death metal and places like that, where technique is integral to the music, you know, and that you're talking about amazing musicians who just happen to be playing very extreme music. I think players like Eddie Van Halen and Randy Rhoads probably in particular have had a huge influence. I mean, a lot of the black metal stuff, you know, bands like Dimmu Borgir and Emperor that were, you know, kind of really important in the 90s and still are to some degree, the classical influence is blatant. You know, the songs are like 7-minute symphonies, really, and very complex in the same way that orchestral music often is, you know.
A weird band, Neurosis Live. For the first hour or so, I was bored. And I started saying to my friend, come on, let's go down the pub and have a beer.
Yeah.
He said, no, let's give it a little bit longer. And after 2 hours, I was absolutely kind of compelled. It worked by accumulation.
Yes.
You know, the kind of longer it went on, the more you feel you're getting sucked into that that strange world of theirs with the back projections of the tides, of snow, of decaying animal bodies.
Yes. good stuff.
They seem to have quite a lot in common with Mastodon. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Mastodon are more, I suppose, up-tempo and I guess are more traditional in the sense that they write catchy riffs and their songs have hooks, and Neurosis aren't really about that. They're a much more kind of dense and dark kind of thing, but they're, you know, as a band they're incredibly dynamic. They're one of those bands that can be incredibly heavy but also have long passages that are incredibly fragile and elegant, you know, and extreme at both ends of the spectrum, you know. I think that, I mean, Neurosis are absolutely a band that it's kind of an immersive experience, you know.
They were also the band on stage during what was the scariest thing I've ever seen at a gig at a festival in Norway a few years ago, when a group of clearly very drunk Norwegian metal fans decided they were just going to set fire to the people standing in front of them. And they were wandering around the crowd with lighted matches, trying to set fire to people's jackets and T-shirts. That was the point that night, which is, I've had enough of watching Neurosis this evening.
I can understand that. Yeah, that's not kind of regular behaviour at metal gigs.
I would hope not, but then Norway. In Norway, the rules of metal are different.
Yeah, they like to set fire to things in Norway. That's true.
Now, so people often think that metal is just one thing. It's this monolithic genre of people with long hair and loud guitars. But it's not, is it? It's enormously diffuse.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like you say, for an outsider, it's probably hard to kind of see the entirety of metal, because people are kind of, you know, brought up with the cliches of Spinal Tap and the obvious big bands that they've seen, you know, and Maiden and Metallica and all that kind of stuff. But the actual scene itself is incredibly broad, and there's a vast range of different subgenres and you know, kind of stylistic quirks that unless you're really involved in it, you're not going to know about, you know.
I mean, when I was a kid, I listened to metal as a kid a lot. There was glam metal, there was Nwobom, there was thrash, there was classic metal. But now there are dozens and dozens and dozens of genres. I think my favourite genre name at the moment is power violence.
Power violence is awesome,
What is power violence when it's at home?
Power violence is extremely fast hardcore punk, basically. So very similar to early Napalm Death stuff, but with the metal element taken away from it. So
What differentiates power violence from grindcore, then?
If you take Celtic Frost away from grindcore, then pretty much you've got power violence. It's just, you know, blast beats and screaming and punk rock guitar sound, really.
Okay, that makes perfect sense to me, really. Now it's time for Singles Club, our weekly run-through some of the week's releases. Dom, let's hear your track first. You've gone for Red Tide Rising by Orange Goblin. That was Red Tide Rising by Orange Goblin. Now, Dom, why have you brought that in today?
Orange Goblin are a band that have been around for the best part of 20 years now, London-based band. And I guess, you know, it's, again, one of those things, if you're in metal, you'll know who they are, and if you're not, you won't, kind of thing. But I just think they're one of the... They're in a grand tradition of British heavy metal, and they're certainly one of the finest live bands in this country as far as metal goes. And that song, it's the opening track from their seventh album, A Eulogy for the Damned, which is, I would say, the best thing they've done. It's it seems to be getting, you know, certainly in the metal press and the rock press is getting a lot of, you know, ecstatic reviews. And they've been around so long, they seem to be a band that are finally getting the recognition that they've deserved for a long time. You know?
Metal's a loyal genre, isn't it? I mean, you can have a 20-year career without the fans turning against you. People don't get bored and move on in the way they do in flighty indie pop.
Yeah, I was thinking that earlier, actually, that, you know, you see all these kind of indie bands and stuff come out and it all seems so terribly transient, you know, and that if they don't, by the time they get to their third album, pretty much everyone's moved on. And I don't know whether metal fans are more patient or more loyal or what it is, but bands seem to be able to have a career that kind of grows steadily, and bands can, you know, Machine Head are a good example. Their first album came out in 1994 and they're still steadily getting bigger and bigger now, you know, nearly 20 years later. And that's true with Orange Goblin as well, although they're very, you know, I suppose, more of an underground thing.
Adam, underground metal, is it one of your big things?
I can't say I know a lot about metal. You know, it's fine. You know, it thunders along merrily. And, yeah, I'm curious as to what an Orange Goblin is and if it's better than any other kind of goblin.
Colour-coded goblins have always been a very important thing. I mean, yeah. Not just in metal, but in The Guardian as well, Adam. And if you're going to stay here much longer, you really need to learn about colour-coding of goblins.
Ah, is it like the scarves out of the pocket in Cruising?
I was impressed by that. I mean, I've kind of been aware of Orange Goblin for a while. I've got a couple of albums at home, but, you know, I've got to be honest, it's not something I return to a lot. But hearing that thundering through... it really had the excitement that I associate with heavy metal. A lot of the metal that I hear these days still has that kind of massively down-tuned element. I know this isn't because that's what all metal is. It's just that's the stuff that seems to cross my desk. But this, yeah, it reminded me of the metal I listened to when I was 13, 14. The stuff that was coming, I suppose, at the back end of Nwobom as things were getting less kind of straightforward and more into the long, extemporizing, not experimental, but kind of more epic style of metal, yeah, that the Maiden were doing, I guess, by the time Bruce Dickinson joined.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Orange Goblin are one of those bands that kind of incorporate, I guess, all the classic kind of periods of metal in their sound. So there's a lot of Sabbath in there, there's Maiden, there's Priest, there's a lot of Motorhead, there's certainly a lot of, you know, Nwobom stuff, and some of the extreme metal stuff. There's, you know, there's bits on the new album that are kind of redolent of Celtic Frost and Bathory and some of the black metal stuff. So there's a lot in there. Southern rock as well. Lynyrd Skynyrd certainly pop up on the new album, you know, once or twice. And I think it's easy to see it as just meat and potatoes metal, but actually there's a lot more going on. There's a lot more depth to it than people realise, you know.
We ought to explain that Nwobom does actually mean something. It's the new wave of British heavy metal, which is bands from the late 70s and early 80s who, as you might guess, were British, and as you also might guess, played heavy metal. Now, next up is Adam's choice, which is all the way from France. The band is Crack Booms. The song is called At Soleil. That's At Soleil by Crack Booms. I say all the way from France, but frankly, that could mean they're from nearer to here than a band from Newcastle. Now, that was chosen by Adam. Adam, tell us what, if anything, there is to know about Crack Booms.
Well, don't know anything about them myself. I actually chose that song after listening to Dom's selection, thinking, trying to go for something. Yeah, something
what will rival it for sheer power?
So, you know, a bit anti-metal. You know, it's sunshiny indie, which, you know, if it was from this country, it's more likely than not have terrible lyrics, but being in French doesn't really matter because we haven't got a clue what they're singing about. But yeah, it just sounded nice, you know, something, you know, forward-looking to when the weather's a bit better, and it's maybe a bit reminiscent of something like Pains of Being Pure at Heart.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Indie pop is one of the styles that we kind of associate with Britain in the 80s or with New York in recent years, but it's genuinely worldwide. There's a massive scene in Spain with Elephant Records. There have always been French indie pop groups as well. This is actually taken from a Guardian compilation of this stuff, isn't it?
Once a month on guardian.co.uk, we have a selection of songs from the Music Alliance Pact, which is where we have bloggers from 36 countries around the world, each selecting, you know, a record from their own country and writing a bit about it. And it's there on our site, and you can stream or download all of the songs. And it's, you know, a really varied selection. There's, you know, we've got some techno from Japan this month, some Britpop from Singapore.
The Singaporean Britpop movement has always been one of my favourites.
Yeah, I know. It's, you know, things you never would have known are out there, and it's fascinating.
I'm just heartbroken that you didn't choose the Romanian entry, if only because the group is called Methadone Skies.
Yeah. What are Methadone Skies?
Who knows?
Perhaps we have to go there to find out.
Now, Dom, the jangle. Do you go for a bit of jangle?
I'm not entirely averse to a bit of jangle. You could probably guess that it's not something I listen to a vast amount, although I was a massive Smiths fan when I was a teenager, so it's not, you know, I'm not obliged to dislike it, but I didn't mind that. I thought it was okay, I've got to be honest. I like the fact that he's singing in French, because that means that the kind of fey and apologetic vocal style seems somehow more apt.
Do you think of the French as fey and apologetic?
Not apologetic, but but certainly French indie, I would think fey is a word that I'm allowed to use. But I like the fact that it's, I don't mean this in a bad way, I like the fact that it's only 2 minutes long. I'm a big fan of short songs,
oh,
generally.
Yes.
I think, you know, once you've said what you were going to say, please stop.
Yeah, it's, to me, it felt deeply all right. I mean, I've heard a lot of this stuff over the years. I think there are bands that do it a lot better. But I think it's always great to hear other takes on it from other places. Interesting to know that the sound of 1986 is still alive and well somewhere in France.
And good to know that the sound of 1996 is alive and well in Singapore.
Who knows where the sound of 2006 is alive?
No, I don't think it is.
Ulaanbaatar, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Finally, we move on to my choice, which is Keep You by Wild Bell. I give you honey and I give you two. All the other women that you treat so rude. Cry, cry, cause you make them blue. Running over town like you got no nerve. Sleeping in the shanty of a brand new girl. Call me after Nancy, but before Rachel. Why can't I keep you for myself? Let's Keep You by Wild Bell. That was my choice. Now, I'm kind of more interested in Wild Bell than I'm keen on them, if you know what I mean. They're a group from Chicago, ostensibly a brother and sister duo, though I believe doubt has already been cast on that notion. They've played a handful of shows. They've put one song out, which I think is coming out on 12-inch single next week, and it is that song. That is all there is available to hear from them. And yet, inevitably, they are the toast of the blogosphere, in the time-honoured phrase used to describe new groups. It's a pleasant enough song to me. I couldn't see anything much wrong with it. But all it was a piece of pop reggae. There's a nice bass sax line that comes in a little bit later in the song. But it seemed to me, why is the world exciting about this? It's a very deracinated take on reggae. There's no oomph in the bass. It's seemed to exist purely as a statement of, well, Please take notice, but without any actual determination to make that statement.
There's the hint of trendy wine bar, perhaps.
There is a hint of wine bar in it. But what is it about the kind of blog arms race that elevates groups to this kind of buzz before anything has even happened for them?
At least with Lana Del Rey, you know, that was a good song, but this is merely an okay song to my ears.
Yeah, is it a case of clutching at straws, do you think, that there's such a kind of paucity of genuinely mind-blowing pop and indie stuff that people kind of go, oh, well, that sounds quite good, and they look cool in a picture. So
they do look nice in a picture, and I guess there is actually a melody there, and actually, melody doesn't seem to be one of the strong points in a lot of kind of independent music at the moment. It's all about texture and about tone, and therefore I think when something with melody comes along, people do sit up and take a bit of notice. And I guess also that, you know, reggae hasn't been plundered by independent music for a little while. I'm struggling to think of things. There are people looking much more towards electronic music or towards hip-hop. I know as soon as we stop recording that 400 reggae-influenced indie records from the last 2 weeks will be mentioned to me,
yeah.
And I'll look like a fool, but I think it's just the desire to be first from
yeah.
pop commentators. Now, I have to say, I heard this record when it featured in Paul Lester's new Band of the Day on the Guardian website on Wednesday. So I'm not trying to say that the Guardian is immune from this. It's Does this happen in metal, Dom, when groups have, there's one song available and suddenly they're the future of music?
I think it depends, really. I think in the kind of hardcore, you know, the real die-hard metal scene, no, not really. I think bands have to have an album out, they have to tour, they have to build up a fan base in the kind of traditional way. I think in the slightly more commercial, visually obsessed side of metal, with, you know, the bands like Bring Me the Horizon and that kind of metalcore thing, I think a lot of bands get signed on the basis of how they look and that they fit neatly into a particular subgenre, and then, you know, they will become big kind of by hook or by crook, really, because the money will be thrown at them to, you know, to appeal to a teenage audience, I think. But metal's audience kind of ranges from 10 to 60, so it's doesn't always work, and the majority of metal fans probably don't go for that. In fact, they're quite cynical about having things kind of forced on them, I think.
So, Adam, we've ascertained that we all quite like that, but without anyone being wildly enthusiastic.
Our finger's just not on the pulse of the, well, maybe, know, the maybe bloggers. It is. Oh.
But do you see a long and fruitful career ahead for Wild Bell, or do you think that by the time March dawns, we'll have already forgotten them?
Well, maybe this is, you know, an opening salvo, and they've got reams of amazing songs coming down the pipeline. It's way too early to tell, and way too early for there to be a big fuss about it.
It'll be interesting to see how they develop, and indeed if they develop. That's Singles Club. Now, moving on, it's usually guitar bands who revive past music styles, and they're often accused of being rank conservatives because of it. But recently, the sound of 80s house has been making a comeback in Hot Chip and the Two Bears, and in the hipster house stylings of the 100% Silk label, and in the music of one of the most talked about bands of the last year, Azari and Third. We sent along Emma Warren to have a word with them.
Azari and Third, welcome to the Guardian Music Weekly podcast.
And I am Fritz Helder.
And I'm Starving Yet Full.
Dynamo Azari.
And our friend Alexander III, he's sick, but he says hello. Check it.
When I first heard your music, it was like, my God, this is like Chicago house and New York house, but kind of pulled together and done in a very kind of now way. I didn't feel like it was retro. I just felt like you were pulling on those different things. Do you feel like all that house music stuff, the original stuff, was so long ago now that it's totally reasonable just to pick out the bits of it that you like? And do you think this is also a good time for house music?
You know, whatever that is, it's just like a modern term. It's been bastardized quite a bit. It's probably, house music's cut down to about 26 letters now, I think, or something like that. There's about 1,000 genres in house music, so you could go to the retro side of it, you can go to a new side of it, but bottom line is there's I suppose a format to house that people recognize, and I guess that would be that boom 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 sound. So to us, we don't really want to get categorized in the boom, boom, boom sound. I think it's a little more sophisticated than that, our music. And so house music's cool, and we definitely take pieces, and we, over the years, we've listened to all types of music, and house music being one of them. And I think we definitely take bits and pieces from that, but overall, our music genre is wider than that. Who knows? Maybe in the future, this hybrid that we have going on right now, we'll have, and there'll be a new name or something. I'm hungry for the power. I'm hungry for the power. I'm hungry for the power. Crazy for your love. I'm hungry for the power. You very much seem like people who like to perform. And I wondered who your favourite performers are. Who are the people that you really, really like to see on stage?
Oh, I mean, so far I've only really attended one concert. And I mean that's just like sitting there waiting for 2 hours. And it was Stevie Wonder. And I would love to see him play again, you know, just over and over. I just remember standing up and the person behind me just tapping. And I totally just not even realize that I was blocking their view, and I never sat down. I just kept on clapping. So, yeah, I'd love to see Stevie in concert very soon again.
I like all the old school cats, you know, like Grace Jones and David Bowie and Prince and Madonna. Like, I feel a lot of times people forget beyond your musicianship and your vocalization. Like, when you put on a show, there's so much involved. And when you're not just standing there singing or whatever, I mean, you're actually, there's actual plot and blocking and things to remember and lights and trap doors. And to me, that's like, that's what you pay money to see, you know? And I really wish that a lot of new bands would take the risk and put on a show like that. I mean, people feel iffy or sketchy about doing it because it maybe means that you're, you know, trying to do something, but it's just the excitement of a carnival like that on stage is what I love to see.
That leads right into what I was going to say, which is the Tommy Lee with the tour with Motley Crue, when they put him up in the air when he was drumming backwards and sideways and they put him over the crowd. I think that was pretty cool. And then, you know, John Bonham solo, drum solo can get pretty intense, that's for sure. And then right all the way through to like a Gwar performance. Have you seen Gwar? It's like a mock band that's from Intelligent University students from the States, and they started it as a joke, and their friend was a costume designer, and they created this whole universe, and they come out and they get political. They'll chop your local, you know, prime minister's head right off and knock him out with a guy, and they've got like everything from torture to, it's quite an intense show, but it's a show that they put on. It's my first concert, actually, Gwar, as a kid.
What can you tell us about the album that you've got coming out?
Oh, the album coming out is a mixture of sounds. It's everything from, you know, asphyxia noir to deep house.
It's a complete journey from start to finish. You know, you can press play and leave it, which is kind of nice. You can play it during the day, you can play it at night, you can drive to it, you can fall asleep to it, you can party all night to it. It's, yeah, there's definitely different songs, and there's different moments and time within the whole album. It's fun.
It's beautiful. It's got long hours of, you know, late night sessions and sweat and dancing and jokes and fights and I don't know, we can talk about anything really on that album if you listen to either the lyrics or just the sound of music.
Zorin Dead, thank you very much.
That was Azarian Third in conversation with Emma Warren. Thank you for listening to this week's Music Weekly, and thanks to our guests Dom Lawson and to Adam Bolt. The show was produced this week by Pascal Wise. You can join in online at guardian.co.uk/music. And we'll be back next week in the safe hands of Alexis Petridis. Thank you. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.